ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. Special counsel Jack Smith has filed a superseding indictment which accuses former President Trump once again of trying to overturn the 2020 election. The charges are the same, the accusations are narrower, and in line with the Supreme Court decision on presidential immunity.
Timing is crucial because the Justice Department typically does not like to do things that could be seen as political or influencing the election too close to November, and we were getting very near the customary deadline of the end of August for this new superseding indictment to occur.
ABC's Aaron Katursky. Tomorrow's morning's launch of SpaceX's Polaris Dawn mission has been delayed due to bad weather. The IDF launching large raids in the West Bank, calling them part of an counterterrorism operation. A blistering heat wave, which set a high record high in Chicago, is now heading to the Northeast. This is ABC News.
I'm Terry Bell with WMDX News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WMDX website at mad.radio.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Could the state soon get its first national park? Representative Tom Tiffany wants to make that happen. He's proposed for the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore to become a national park. That designation would mean the area gets additional funding for conservation and projects. Wisconsin is one of 20 states without a national park. And all summer, you've had to check to make sure beaches are open because toxic algae blooms can cause them to close. Well, the Environmental Protection Agency says it's happening more and more. John Rumpler of Environment America says big factory farms are one of the main contributors.
That volume of manure, whether it's spread on crops or otherwise managed, it just all too often winds its way from the croplands to rivers and lakes and streams.
The EPA is considering updating regulations on waste from slaughterhouses for the first time in 40 years. And that's what you need to know. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson, and this is Civic Media News.
The John and Gordy Show.
People don't realize there used to be radio schools.
It was a night school. Uh-huh. And my very first day, I walk up the stairs and there in the lobby is my instructor. He's laying on the couch, his arm over his head, and he's going, "Oh my God, I wish I had gotten into real estate." That was the encouragement I got right away.
Weekday morning, 6 until 8 on Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Mad Radio WMDX, home of the John and Gordy Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Last week while we were in Chicago for the little powwow that the Democrats held there at the United Center, General Motors announced $4.4 billion in quarterly profits. Also, they're going to lay off another 1,000 salaried software and service employees. And look, you know, most people are like, oh, who cares? They're salaried. They're company people. They're jobs, man. These are people's families. This is a company that made $4.4 billion in the quarter. And they're going to, basically squeeze the quarter till the eagle screams. And out these employees go and their families ultimately. Now, this is on top of last year where they announced that some 5,000 salaried employees took buyouts in their quest to cut about $2 billion in costs. Obviously, so they could line the pockets even further. And it takes me back to this place of, again, which side are you on? I'm a labor guy. I never want to see somebody lose their jobs. I've always been against the idea of consolidation. When I hear corporate speak like synergy and redundance, you know, we're gonna move in a more synergistic way and get rid of the redundancy. I know what that means. That means you, that means me, that means working people out on their you-know-whats and families that are going to struggle, all in the quest for more for the handful. That simple. And this election season is about that. It's about ensuring that working people have a voice, a place in this economy. Which is why when I saw, again, this which side are you on thing for me, I saw Rich Lowry over at the New York Times had a piece saying that, you know, Donald Trump can win on character. And I'm going, character? And his what he writes is, he said, presidential races are won and lost on character as much as on the issues. And often the issues are proxies for character. He says not character in the sense of a candidate's personal life, but the attributes that play into the question of whether someone is suited to be to the presidency. Is he or she qualified, trustworthy, strong, and does he or she care about the average American? And as I'm reading this, I'm going, you're talking about Trump, right? Someone who has proven to be unqualified, someone who clearly not trustworthy, strong, and care about the average American? Are you kidding? And this is one of those things where I absolutely agree, character matters. I may not want my children to emulate every aspect of a president, but I want them to be someone that you look up to, not someone that you're disgraced by. And you want to see some of yourself in what these folks do. And I look at Tim Walz, somebody who I most certainly see something of myself. You know, my wife and I were talking about how much I like this guy. She's like, you know, sounds like you got a little bromance going on. And I go, yes, because this is a guy that I identify with. He could be our neighbor. And she goes, well, you see a lot of yourself in him. You're a good neighbor. You do you work hard. You do all these things, community stuff, all this stuff. And I said, yeah, I go, this is kind of why it's important to be able to see yourself in your elected leaders, which is why I think it's so incredible that Kamala Harris is on the top of the ticket, that there are people who have never seen themselves in an administration, who have never seen people who have struggled in the way that they are or have. And that's why I think this ticket is really important. And that character absolutely does matter. This idea that the person who's making the rules, who's using the levers of power, do it in a way that understands us. And I look at the Tim Walz story, and I'm going to hammer on this because I think it's really important. This is a guy who took a job as a seventh grade track coach because he wanted to pay off the lunch debt of some of the students. He then gets into public office, and as governor, what does he do? He eliminates the lunch debt for all students and makes sure that lunch programs are in the schools in Minnesota. That, to me, speaks volumes of someone who understands why government exists, how to use government, and to use it in a way that benefits we the people. I look at Trump in the 4 years that he was in office. This is someone who tells us government's broken, and according to him, he's the only one who can fix it by breaking it even further. So this is, for me, one of those moments where you go, which side are we on in this equation? Are we on the side of, yeah, break it and smash it to pieces, burn it to the ground because it's a burning hellscape dumpster fire? Or are you on the side where I find myself? We do through our government the things that we can't do individually. We collectively come together and solve problems. It's been a while since we've done that. And again, I look at our Republican friends who have done a really good job of gridlock, a really good job of blocking and delaying any progress and, you know, repealing a lot of what our grandparents' generation fought for. So for me, this is an opportunity right now to move forward and to use government in a more powerful, more positive, worker-centric way. And what I saw at the DNC was all of that right on display. People talking about the possibilities of what if tomorrow. The things that we can do to make lives better, which is a world different than what we saw out of the RNC, which was all about fear and all about demonization, all about name calling. It was, to me, the right kind of character. And if Rich Lowry is going to use character as something that you're elected on, let me ask every parent out there, when you're not around, do you want your children acting like Donald Trump or like Kamala Harris and Tim Walz? Do you want a spoiled child who's going to kick and scream in the cereal aisle, or someone who's going to be helpful to their neighbors. I see this in very simple terms, and it goes back to that old labor frame of which side are you on? Clearly, in this moment, I'm on the side of using our government to solve the problems that we have collectively and in a way that makes lives better. That's simple to me. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@therickSmithshow.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about just how bad Trump could be for government employees and maybe what we should be doing to solve that problem. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So look, Rich Lowry, like I said, I think is partially correct. Character does matter. But Trump is a character. I don't think he has the kind of character, the kind of morality, the kind of character, the kind of personality I want my children emulating. I don't think anybody else does either, which is why I think character matters in this moment. So I think Lowry, a little bit right. We're here to share some thoughts on, you know, Tim Walz, the convention, and answer the question, does character really matter? I've asked Rourke Hartop to come talk with us. Rourke is AFGE National Vice President for District 8. They represent federal workers in Iowa, Minnesota, North and South Dakota, and also Nebraska. So two Tim Walz states. Rourke, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, glad to be here, Rick. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the convention. I understand you were in the arena with us as we were broadcasting from Media Row. You were on the floor doing your thing.
Yeah. No, I was there, and a great environment, a lot of energy, a lot of positivity. I mean, folks are genuinely excited about the Harris-Walz campaign.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things I've been saying, and I've probably been beating this a little bit too much. But if you want a Labor Party in this country, let's take one over, and looked pretty good last week in Chicago.
Yeah, there was a huge shout out to labor and organized labor every single night. UAW was represented. Our national president, Everett Kelly, gave the invocation on Thursday night to kick off the events leading up to Harris's nomination. So, you know, AFGE was represented on the stage. AFL-CIO was really present and all over with all their various events. So, yeah, it was very much a labor event.
So I want to talk a little bit about this character thing because, you know, I agree, character does matter. And from what we know and what we've seen of Donald Trump over the last far too long is clearly not somebody I want my children emulating. But I look at someone like Tim Walz, who we're just learning more and more about. You know, very much so someone I wouldn't mind my children emulating. You kind of have a path crossing story, don't you?
I do. You know, so Governor Tim Walz, he's born and raised in my now home state of Nebraska before joining the National Guard, serving our country, becoming a school teacher and moving to Minnesota where he was then a football coach. I was born and raised in Minnesota, and then I moved to Nebraska later. My dad took a job at the railroad. But, you know, so Governor Walz from Nebraska moved to Minnesota. I'm from Minnesota and moved to Nebraska. And he ultimately went on to become the congressional rep that houses my tiny hometown of Stuartville, Minnesota.
So when you talk to people who are still there, family, friends, you know, what kind of a guy was he? What kind of a sense do you have of this guy who I'm hoping will be our next vice president?
Yeah, I mean, we're all pretty excited about him because he literally could be any one of us. I mean, he goes out, he hunts, he fishes, he taught school, he coached football. You know, he served our country in the military. I mean, literally could be any one of us from middle America and from the middle class. And he's never lost those roots. He's very genuinely himself. And what you see is what you get.
Yeah, it is that character that I find most interesting. And he's one of those people who, you know, as I've been learning more and more about him and we've been sharing more, it's the kind of Democrat that I've been saying we need. It's the kind of politician we need. Someone who has a life experience, gets into politics to right or wrong. I mean, the story about the school lunches, the story, you know, about, you know, helping push people out of snow blanks. This is stuff that communities do, that people do, neighbors do. And for me, it's going into government for the right reasons.
Yeah, he very much is that family oriented, community based sort of guy, and it's why I think we've seen him serve in so many ways. And I use that word serve. Like, it was never about him. It's just there's been a calling, you see it, and he goes to fill a space because he thinks he can help. And I think that's very much evidenced by the military, by the giving back to a community, being a public school teacher with the school lunches. I mean, just like you just hit it. I mean, That's the kind of guy he is, and the sort of leaders that we need more of in our country to remind us of our humanity and our sense of community.
No, I mean, my wife and I were talking about it, and I was saying, look, you know, this is the guy I've been constructing for all 19 years of doing this show. It's the kind of Democrat that I want to see, someone who's not going to offer to hold your coat during a street fight, someone who is going to, when they go low, you smash their face into the dirt, the kind of guy who's going to then reach out a hand and help people. And my wife's like, well, it sounds like you got a little bromance going on there. I go, I do. This is the kind of guy we need. And she goes, that's because you see yourself in him. And I thought, one, great compliment from my wife. Thank you. But yes, that's the reality.
Yeah, you're 1,000% right. I mean, like I said, he literally could be any one of us. And that's why I think we all connect to him. And for those of us that have got kids, how wonderful was that to see how genuinely excited his son was to see his dad on that stage? Like, how wonderful was that?
And again, you know, I can't say this enough with, you know, the FCC rules. I can't actually say it. But F. Ann Coulter.
No joke, right? I think we've all been saying that for 20 years.
Well, that, but in that moment, how dare you go after that child?
Right.
Someone who is enormous. I don't know if she's got kids or not, but I guarantee none of them are crying for her when she does something right.
Right.
If she does something. No, I mean, I don't want to attack her for that, but look, that was a genuine moment. It was a non-scripted moment. You couldn't possibly make that up. I felt for that kid. I was with that kid. That's an amazing moment, man.
It is an amazing moment. And for anybody that's going to have anything negative to say about that, going back to your theme here about character, right? It speaks volumes to the lack of character that those types of folks would have to attack that kid and that family. I mean, that was such an amazing moment for all of us that take fatherhood seriously, right?
Yeah, and especially, you know, that we understand that the child has some disabilities, some issues that are going to attack, unforgivable. But yet, you know, and I've seen this meme on social media, when you saw the crying, what's that kid's name? Kyle Rittenhouse?
Yeah.
When you saw him crying, boy, the right was all sympathetic and teary-eyed for him, which I got to tell you, I know which side I'm on.
Right. So maybe if Tim Walz's son had been carrying an automatic rifle, it might have been different.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that speaks volumes to the time we live in, doesn't it, Rourke?
It does.
Where I want to go now is that, look, you know, obviously AFGE has endorsed the Harris-Walz team. And for reason. Look, I think Project 2025 lays out pretty clearly that there is a target on your back, that, you know, Donald Trump has been talking for years now about going in, firing all the federal workers and replacing them with good loyalist and good patronage hires. How would a Trump administration, how would that work out for your members?
Yeah, so I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, it's the Schedule F. It's like you said, the hiring the loyalists and weeding out those of us that are career public servants. So for our members, they went into government service, not out of sense of self, but sense of all of us, right? It's back to that community. And so they take it very solemnly and very seriously. And as long as I've been involved with the government, we roll with the punches. Each administration and party's got its own priorities. And we're the ones that endure to keep that continuity of government moving. And for them, this would be the end of their careers. For anybody that's ever taken it seriously, to then suddenly have to just be loyal to one party or another, it's going to be unforgivable for them. And I mean, we can get into specifics. The last time around, we saw cuts to our official time that allowed us as federal employees the opportunity to work for the union and to represent our members in all of collective bargaining and around their conditions of employment. Those things would end. Myself, my home agency, I'm a Department of Homeland Security immigration officer, and part of Project 2025 would be to reclassify all of us as national security, which under statute removes us from bargaining unit status. So all of the wonderful things that our members enjoy in Homeland Security would suddenly vanish. They would no longer have the protections that we've been able to negotiate for.
You know, I was reading an NBC News article that said, you know, union members are voting. How did the headline go? Union members aren't just voting on labor anymore. And you go, well, maybe we should be, because maybe we're not getting the right information in this. Which side are they on? And what you've just laid out is what Trump did while he was president. I think we have a little historic amnesia, because we tend to forget just how bad Donald Trump was for working people. And we don't really talk about how good Joe Biden has been, and I hope how good Kamala Harris will be as she continues Biden's legacy. It's one of those issues that I think we have to go, as labor people, have to go and explain. This is what it was. This is where we are. We don't want to go back there.
No, we don't want to go back. And that's been a theme for the Harris campaign, has been we're not going back. And it's the previous Trump administration, what they did more than anything wasn't so much the actions themselves, is they learned. They made a lot of mistakes and they learned, and they've had 4 years to sit on it and to perfect that. So the thought that they could just roll in and make the same mistakes a second time, I think, is very foolish. I don't think they're doing that. That's what Project 2025 right. lays out.
No, and look, to your point on this, I don't think anyone thought Trump was going to win, other than me. I don't think the think tank world, I don't think the right wing, I don't think all the apparatus, I don't think all of the, the bad idea people really believed he was going to win. So they didn't prepare. They weren't ready on day one to put their people into Trump's cabinet, and they let him go find his very best people, who are just as incompetent as he is in a lot of places, or actually wanted to do the job and end up getting fired. I see now that the whole state policy network, all the think tanks, all of the right-wing apparatus, they believe he's going to win, so they've put 920 pages of bad ideas out for display with a very confident thinking that they're going to be able to do this stuff. It tells me that if they get the chance on day one, they start sprinting out of the box to repeal the 20th century.
I think you're 1,000% spot on. I mean, now we're starting to see the Supreme Court decisions coming through that are reinforcing their ability to do what it is they think they want to do.
And ultimately, I look at you and your members as prime targets, because ultimately in the public sector, that's where the mass of the union density is, about 30-35% union density in the public sector, and about 6% in the private sector, which is how we get to 10% overall. So going after government unions, that's on their wet dream list.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, and the devastation across the board. I mean, we hear the horror stories about the VA administration and the Social Security administration already. Start turning folks into political, hatchet men, as it were, just out to fill an agenda. Those administrations are going to be completely horrific.
Yeah.
Let alone getting into immigration and border security. Again, we've got a whole career, I'll say career, civil service where they're politicized. It's going to be awful for our entire country.
Yeah. Now, you know, of the states that you represent, that District 8 encompasses, Iowa, Minnesota, North and South Dakota, and Nebraska, one of them, you know, seems, you know, like something of a labor area. The other place, or a blue, let's go blue. Minnesota is the blue state. The rest of your area is crazy red to crazier. I mean, Iowa's lost its freaking mind. The Dakotas have never been friendly to labor issues, in my view. Nebraska's been somewhere in the weird world. How do your members, the people that you talk to every day, how are they seeing what's being played out in front of them?
Yes, I mean, it is a much more conservative lot to recruit from and to represent. Mostly they want common sense. That's been the overarching theme since I've been a representative from the area, is that they're like, you know, we're not so much interested in politics. Is it's like, represent labor issues. What's good for us at work? And I won't say everybody, because you're never going to get everybody, but our members do understand how bad this could be for them at work and the protections they would lose. So they have been very common about it, very common sense.
Interesting, because, you know, a lot of people that I talk to, you know, a lot of my Teamster friends anyway, they don't think it's going to filter down to them. You know, they don't believe that unions can go away. They don't believe that they can be basically outlawed, because our minds don't let us think that way. But if they do what they say they're going to do, if we have the courts who keep moving us back toward the Lochner era, we're moving to a time where labor unions were basically illegal, where collective bargaining wasn't the rule of the land. And it could eventually trickle down to them.
Certainly. I mean, luckily for me, I've been here as their representative through the previous Trump administration, so I don't let them forget. But they did see the stripping away of the unions in 2018 and 2019, and the lack of access that they had to me, to their representative, and to our staff and our elected representatives at the local levels. They did see that. So luckily we've got a little bit of continuity in the district, but not everybody's quite that lucky.
Yeah, no, I mean, but I look at Project 2025 and the things that they want to do, and they basically want to, they say it, they want to get rid of unions as we know it and bring in these suggestion box unions, these company unions. We're gonna make company unions great again. And it's I don't think most people understand how much weaker labor can get. So that's why I think it's important to point this stuff out. Now, we've talked about how bad we think the Trump Vance year people will be. You know, how do you think Harris and Walz, if they're elected, how do you think they're going to handle these things? Have you had any conversations? Has the international given you assurances with their conversations? What are you hearing?
So yeah, we're kind of into the infancy of sorts with the Harris Walz campaign, just because with President Biden stepping aside. But our conversations with the Biden Harris administration have actually been really good. President Biden has been the most labor friendly president, I think, well, certainly in my lifetime, but in many of our lifetimes.
Mine too.
What he did was he repealed a lot of what Trump did, but then he went further and he reinstated a lot of the labor management forms that were mandated under Bill Clinton back in the mid 90s. And those have been great. I mean, we've seen these play out in our agencies where they're establishing those forms and they're establishing conversations. And we've seen the grievance rates go down. We've seen the unfair labor practice rates go down. But further than that, Biden's really building from ground zero. And for him to put forward initiatives, it's really just the start. And so now Harris and Walz have got an opportunity in front of them to where they can really push forward and expand further. And I think they see that.
If the convention showed us anything, right? If the convention showed us anything, they're on team labor.
They are, very much so. I mean, we felt the love walking in the door.
And I think it's a little more visceral than just politics, in that, as I've been saying for a very long time, if you're going to reunite this country, we've got to reunionize. We've got to give people the opportunity to lead that American dream, to work hard, play by the rules, and yes, get ahead. So the best way to do that, the secret sauce of my grandparents' generation, was high union rates, more people with collective bargaining agreements, more people with contracts with cost of living adjustments, more people with health and retirement security, more people with job security. That for me, hopefully the way they're going.
Yeah, it increases your confidence in the economy because you've got a steady paycheck coming in, like, you know, that sort of thing. Being comfortable at work and knowing you're protected at work, it really does raise all of our psyche. And it's that old adage, right? A rising tide raises all boats.
Yeah.
I think that's where you start.
Any message for union members? Any thoughts before we wrap up?
Yeah, so one of the themes of the Harris-Walls campaign has been to, you know, do something. So my message to the members has been, look, there are plenty of opportunities to get out, to volunteer, to knock on doors, to put signs in your yards, to make phone calls and to do the phone banking. Please do something because we can't go back.
Do something and then vote.
You got it. Yes, that's the biggest thing you can do is do that one something is to vote.
There you go. Rourke, I appreciate you taking time for us. Good stuff.
All right. Thanks a lot, Rick. Good to be here.
Rourke Hotop, AFGE National Vice President, District 8. You want to get more information on what they do, we'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Going to take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. Back with your emails. Stick around.
Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Showers and storms in the overnight, plenty of clouds and patchy fog as well. Temperatures dropping to the mid and upper 60s. On your Wednesday, morning fog will give way to a mix of clouds and sunshine, highs in the upper 70s to near 80 degrees. It's 78 at our studios.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 11 till noon on the talk you can't ignore. Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX and on the Civic Media app.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So one of the things that drives me crazy is you look at these big companies, these big multinational companies with really deep pockets, and the first thing they seem to want to do when they take over a new company as well, fire all the old workers, especially if they're unionized, and spend lots and lots of money denying workers their right to a voice, to collective bargaining, to better wages, better hours, better conditions. And this has been going on for like the last year out in California as this big Mexican supermarket chain has taken over another chain here in the U.S. And they've spent millions of dollars trying to deny these workers just the dignity of a decent job and being really punitive on the other side, which is why I've asked Lou Villavazza to come talk with us. He's the Teamsters Local 630 Secretary, Treasurer, and Principal Officer. He's the guy who's representing these workers at Smart and Final, which is a grocery chain distribution outfit out in California. Lou, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, thanks for having me, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to communicate with the public on what's happening with Smart and Final.
So get me through where this is at. How did this start? Who are the players? How did we get here?
Yes, what ended up happening is the Teamsters had organized Smart and Final many years ago. So Smart and Final was actually under a Teamster contract for many, many years, and then you know, sometimes what happens over the years, apathy in the membership, and for whatever reasons, they fall for the company's lies. Those workers decertified back in the early 90s. And since then, we've had countless workers there that got fed up. They got fed up after several decades of the company being sold multiple times and takeaways. And everything that they promised them, which they actually put on paper when they decertified, they started seeing that, hey, man, we made the wrong mistake. But obviously, it was a whole generation of workers that 30 plus years later are now suffering the consequences of those veteran workers that made that bad decision. And it's crazy because right next to the facility where they're at, They actually work next to UNFI, which is another big corporation that supplies a lot of the Hispanic markets as well. And they are Teamsters and they are under a contract, and they can see the difference between having a contract, having a voice at the table and not. So these workers came to us back in 2023 after they had enough, and because they were recently purchased back in 2021. That is when Chedraui, who is a big Mexican conglomerate, second largest grocery store owner and supplier in Mexico, purchased them for about $640 million. And over that time, really no engagement with their workers other than takeaways and changes. The workers had enough. They came to us and asked for help. How do we do this? And we talked to them. We told them what it was going to be, a fight. And sure enough, our folks were up to the challenge. And we told them, and they brought in about five union busters that they brought in, holding their closed caption meetings, threatening them, all sorts of stuff, which triggered several ULP charges on that end. And at the beginning of 2023, they won their certification through the National Relations Board to bring in their union and have a voice at the table. Right after that, a second group of sworn final workers in Riverside also ended up coming to us, and there was already a disparity within the same company. So you have two distribution centers already making $2 to $3 difference doing the same work. So the Riverside folks were basically a second class citizen to the Commerce workers, and they said enough is enough as well. And as we were getting ready to begin, actually we had started negotiations with them on Cinco de Mayo of 23. That following week, which was a week before the election for the Riverside group, the company ended up calling all the employees on the shop floor and said, we got some great news. So at the same time, they ended up telling all the workers that they were going to invest so much money into changing and modifying their stores. And not only that, that they had just entered into a new lease for a new 1.7 million square foot facility, and that they were going to create hundreds of more jobs, double the amount of what currently was in place. And then at the end, they said they would bring in all their five distribution centers and consolidate it into one. The worst part about it is that they told them that not to worry, we're going to have these jobs here. You just have to reapply for them. Okay. Which is a big issue. And several employees were raising their hands for questions, and they wouldn't give them the time. They said, hey, we're not going to answer any questions. If you have any questions, email us at chedrauiusa.com or .org. And they wouldn't answer their questions. But when you start telling employees, you're going to have to reapply. Well, some of these members have been there for 30, 40 years. They've been through several changes and been bought and sold several times. They never had to reapply for their jobs.
Right.
And that's because the companies prior understood that you retain your workers because they're experienced. Not only that, they are the ones that built the Smart and Final brand. So what ended up happening after we started those negotiations, they ended up having those notices. We ended up talking to their attorney because Carlos Smith, who's the CEO for Smart and Final, yet has shown his face at the table. He was there. He was there with those union busters. He was able to do that, put out a nice video telling them why they shouldn't unionize, and visited one of the facilities with his armed security guards to intimidate our members. But since we started negotiating, he pawned that off on one of his attorneys, Steve Willis, out of Steptoe. And since then, all it's been has been delay, and avoiding to get a contract.
Yeah, I mean, classic union busting. I do want to go back to the reapplying thing, because this is one of those tactics that we see these companies pulling. That we're gonna move to a new facility, and you can reapply for your job, which means you're all fired now. And of course, there'll be lower wages, less benefits. Your seniority will be probably all gone. And oh, you troublemakers who believe that you should have the right to organize and collectively bargain, you probably aren't going to get rehired. So this seems to be classic American tale that we've exported to Mexico.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, because it's taken it a step further. They put it on paper. So, you know, the way that the attorney drafted that letter for Carlos Smith, put a little bit of flowers in there, like, no big deal. You know, you're just going to have to reapply. Everything will be kosher. The reality is, no, we already knew what was coming. We saw the boogeyman behind it. And not only that, the way they did it, right a week before the Riverside folks were scheduled to vote, was to intimidate them. His visit to the facility with security, armed security guards, was to intimidate the worker. So it's the same playbook, but it's a little bit different, because them coming from Mexico, they don't have the labor laws we have here in the U.S. Okay, over there things run a lot different, and I think that this employer, this family Chedraui, and especially their CEO, thinks that they're in Mexico and that they can operate the way that they want to. You know, it is true here. The resources are tight at the NLRB. It's a slower process, and they know it. So these attorneys guide these companies and telling them, you know, don't worry about it. Spend the money, but we'll get rid of them. Why? Because we're going to delay it. By that time, we're gone with everybody else. The problem we have here is that as we got further into negotiations, we doing requests for information and getting the information, they did end up putting it on paper, how many jobs were going to be terminated, more or less a graph of when they're going to do this. And the problem with this is that it's all based on retaliating against the worker. Because if they knew what they were doing on running a business like that, you know that you retain the folks that built your company. They're the ones that built. You just bought it. You came in with heavy pockets and bought it. But these workers are the ones that are actually running those warehouses, supply the 250 plus stores. And for you to now take the position, oh, we don't need them. We're going to move them over here, pay them $10, $12 less, and we're going to bring a bunch of people that are going to want these jobs. No, they're not. And that's what we've told them before. I said the turnover rate, even now at those distribution centers, they go through about 150 to 200 people every year. And they're lucky if they keep 10 of them, because of the amount of work that these folks do, because of the engineering standards that they have to go through. And not only that, the temperature climate that they're in some of these rooms, I mean, one of these facilities is a giant cooler. They're bringing in folks off of a temp agency in shorts, not even giving them the proper PPE to be in those temperature controlled rooms to select this product. So it's a big issue that we have. We have over 100 complaints in front of the National Labor Relations Board. We have dozens and dozens of ULP's unfair labor practices in front of the board, including the one we recently have, the recent charges that were filed as they went out on strike last week on August the 19th. And that is because this company continues to retaliate against these workers, continues to spit in the face of U.S. labor laws, and also takes it a step further. There was a new law that went into place out here in California, was an amendment to the Grocery Worker Retention Act. And the reason being is there was already a law on the books prior to that that was put in by the assembly member Lorena Gonzalez, and then recently modified by the assembly member Chris Holden. And what that law provides under AB 647 is that if a company consolidates, restructures, you know how you have these mergers. So under that process, because that happens a lot in the grocery industry and it's happened over the years. So when that happens, this law was put in place for them to make sure that their current workforce has priority over folks being hired off the streets.
Right.
Okay. Under a union contract and under the Teamsters setup we have, we've gone through these mergers. We've gone through it with Safeway and Vons and Albertsons. But under that, the companies negotiate with their union, with the representatives, and we come to an agreement. They understand, they protect their worker. Why? Because they're the reason that they're successful. They're the reason that the communities go to shop at these supermarkets, right? So you take your workforce with you because it applies from the distribution center, the drivers that deliver it to the stores, all the way to your clerks at the store. These laws were put in place because we've had situations like that before. We had back in 2015, 16, we had something that's known as the Hagen's deal, right? And this has happened before where you have companies that try to come into the industry, but it's kind of a shell game. And they move things around just for these bigger corporations to come back and buy these markets on pennies on the dollars. That happened back in 2015, and a lot of union members lost jobs because of it, because those stores ended up closing up. Here we are where you're seeing it now between Kroger and Albertsons, right? As a matter of fact, today they're in court right now up in Oregon, right? Trying to fight the FTC because the FTC is blocking it. Because it doesn't, it's not going to be better for the consumer. It doesn't save the consumer any money. All it does is gives them more leverage for them to be able to set prices. I mean,
and to hold down wages.
Yeah, lower the wages. They keep saying we're not. There's not going to be no loss of jobs, but we all know what that's not true. And not only that, it creates a food desert in some of the communities where they're not able to get food to their families. So all of these mergers and acquisitions only benefit the top and the shareholders, and it doesn't take the community into interest. Now, let me digress, going back to Smart and Final. The same thing is going to happen here. Smart and Final, you don't put five DCs into one giant 1.7 million square foot facility and not have potential to grow. Their plan is no different than Kroger in the future. They're setting themselves up to be able to swallow up some of the other Hispanic markets. And that's going to impact other union members as well, as I mentioned, like at UNFI. But right now, what they're doing to these workers, not only is immoral, they should be ashamed of themselves. And also, the government officials that are allowing this to happen, we have laws on the books that have the teeth that allows them to put an injunction to stop that. But the problem we have is that they're not moving fast enough. Whether it's a lack of resource or what, we can't be passing laws that are toothless. We have the law AB 647 right now, which the DLSE has opened up an investigation into them, okay? We have yet to hear where they're at with this. And that's a problem because other companies are watching this and saying, well, I'll just pick up and move, like you said earlier, right, Rick? Big corporation buys it up. Let me get rid of them. Let's move over here. Amazon model. They just churn through people. They just chew them up and spit them out. I'll find somebody else that wants the job. And the whole thing is a race to the bottom. That's the problem we have. This company is coming from Mexico. They have the money to keep this locked up at the NLRB for years. Yeah. And the problem with that is, meanwhile, who's losing? The American worker. And in this case, it's all retaliatory because they're the ones that created this issue. So they got a problem with the union. These companies need to understand, we're not the ones that are causing these problems. It is your management staff that creates that. For a worker, get to the point where I'm like, you know what? I need a voice. I need a voice because you guys are just stepping all over my back.
What they're doing. Lou, at the end of the day, we both know it's all about wages, hours, conditions. Conditions generally now being the main reason people organize. But I saw something that, you know, this company's got, like you said, deep pockets, and they've lost over $30 million just in 2023 alone to fend off the union. So money doesn't seem to be the driver anymore. I mean, we're told in a capitalist system it's all about the money. It seems to me this is more about the control than it is about the money, and perhaps the workers that they could bring here from other places to take those jobs. I know that's been thrown out. I'm curious on your thoughts on those.
And right now, what you just said, they just had a recent call with the shareholders. It's the first time. So out here in California, between the last strike and leading up to the 4th of July and this one, they continue to say, the Teamsters are lying. We're going to create 1,000 new work jobs. But the thing is, it's bullshit. Why? Because those jobs that they're creating are going to be based on their experienced workforce that they're terminating. That's what they're not telling the public. So what we're out there right now is we're not just on strike out there. We're also, we have a consumer boycott out there. We're out there in front of a lot of these stores throughout Southern California, letting the public know what this company is doing, which is coming to the U.S., destroying American jobs. They're not creating any new jobs. Those jobs already are taken by American workers that chose to exercise their legal rights under federal law. That is who Chedraui is. That is who owns Smart and Final. These guys are bad actors in an industry that has been there for many, many years. and has been able to provide families, workers that for their families to be able to take care of them, buy a home, send their kids to college, have affordable health care. In this case, in Southern California, most of these grocery companies are under contract. So a lot of our members are able to have free health care that they're able to provide for themselves and their families.
Basic necessities.
That's all right.
Basic necessities. So last question I got for you, Jimmy.
Yes, sir.
Last time I got for you, Lou, is what can we do to help? I mean, ultimately, this is about putting pressure on this company. Ultimately, it's about putting pressure on our elected leaders. Ultimately, it's about we as consumers exercising our right to not to go and patronize these businesses. You know, what do you want us doing? How can I help? How can our audience listening help?
Well, what I'm asking to what I'm asking all your audience, and I know you're all across the country, because to support these workers by not shopping at Smart and Final, we need to boycott this employer. We need to control. We control the purse. We control where we spend our money. And the only way these corporations are going to understand that is by us shopping where they take care of their workers. You know, you have a choice as to where you spend your money and how you provide for your family. And if this company wants to continue to violate the law, both federal and state laws, we need to give them the example that we're not going to shop there until they get their act together and take care of their employees who actually built that brand. And not only that, take it a step further to all other companies, including companies like Amazon, all of these other companies that are just taking advantage of this. Because you know what? Everybody should be sick and tired of when you got two billionaires going on live stream on Twitter, whatever it's called now, and laughing at workers, laughing in their face. Oh, yeah, you got rid of all those employees because they wanted to organize. That's what's happening in the Smart and Final. That's what's happening to a lot of American workers out there. They're taking advantage of the laws that we already have in place because they got more money and they can lock this shit up in court. Excuse my language. They can lock it up in courts for years to come. So we need to control that and make sure that we know where we shop and what those companies are about so that they take care of these workers and protect American jobs.
And ultimately, it comes down to who we put into the office come November. And all of that. But Lou, I appreciate you taking some time for us. I wish you the best. I hope you'll come back and talk to us as this continues. But as they say in the strike world, one day longer, my brother.
Yes, sir. And thank you, Rick, for the opportunity and the platform to speak on this. We appreciate you very much and the work that you do. And thank you for your service as a longtime Teamster. We appreciate you.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. Lou Villavazzo, Secretary Treasurer and Principal Officer with Teamsters Local 630. You can check out their website for more information, teamsters630.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1921. That was the day that the Green Bay Packers football team received a charter from the American Professional Football Association. A year later, this would become the National Football League. The Green Bay Club had started up 2 years earlier. Its original sponsor was the Indian Packing Company in Green Bay, Wisconsin. They packaged canned meat. Meat packaging was a major industry in the Midwest during this era. Packing plants in Chicago, Kansas City, Iowa, and Wisconsin processed the cattle and pigs raised in the West as meat to feed the nation. Curly Lambeau was a shipping clerk for the company. He helped to organize a group of local players into a football team. Curly persuaded his boss to donate money for the uniforms, and it was there that the name Packers was born. When the Indian Packing Company fell on hard times, they were bought out by Acme, another packing company based in Chicago. So, for a brief moment, the Green Bay Packers, one of the staunchest rivals of the Chicago Bears, was actually owned by a Chicago company. Although Acme only owned the team for 1 year, the team nickname stuck. Lambeau was able to buy the team back. He went on to become the Packers coach, leading them to 6 championships. The Green Bay Packers are not the only American sports franchise that's name harkens back to a particular kind of labor. Another Wisconsin team, the Milwaukee Brewers baseball team, is a reference to that city's proud beer brewing tradition. In Big Ten sports, the Purdue Boilermakers and Nebraska Cornhuskers take to the gridiron each week with names that reflect the working traditions of the cities where the teams play ball. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Got to tell you, there's so much to that story that we actually didn't get to and we're going to. Like the fact that California Representative Jimmy Gomez sent a letter to investigate to the Department of Transportation, Department of Labor, and to the Federal Trade Commission to say, hey, look, some problems here, something maybe you should be looking into, we should be investigating, because understand, if this company gets away with what they're doing, there will be a slew of other Mexican companies that do this. And we didn't get into the cross-border trucking issue or any of the other stuff that could be problematic going forward. So for me, this is a pretty big deal, what these workers there are going through, and why we should, especially if you're in an area where this corporation operates, most certainly something that you should be paying attention to. And look, you know, this Smart and Final group, this is, again, as he pointed out, they had been unionized for years. The company promises them the sun, the moon, the world. And, well, they got shafted. They got screwed. Something seriously wrong there. Now, again, this is where I come back to elections have consequences and elections matter. The only reason we're actually talking about this and there's actually a move to stop this company from doing this to the employees is because there's a Democrat in the White House. You've got a National Labor Relations Board that is appointed by Democratic representatives. And they actually are living the mission, which is why, again, last Thursday you saw what came out of an Amazon decision where, and we've talked about the Palmdale Amazon and the drivers there who fought for their rights to organize as Amazon was throwing out one of their third party contractors. And, you know, this most recent opinion by the National Labor Relations Board is kind of reviving that joint employer rule, ruling that the workers in Palmdale, California, at the Amazon are actually employees. And why this is important, and this is an ideological Democratic-Republican debate. Republicans want everyone at will. They want, you know, everyone working gig jobs and disposable. Democrats are going, hey, look, there should be some security with jobs. You should have a right to a job, absolutely, and that job should come with good benefits, good wages, and security. Not just, hey, you're on your own there, buddy, but actual employment with actual rights. And this joint employer rule is kind of a big deal. You remember during the Obama years, they were moving in that direction. When you see an Amazon truck rolling down the street, you think they work for Amazon. They don't. They work for a third-party contractor that contracts with Amazon. They wear the clothes, they drive the truck, they have to do what they're told, but they don't really work for Amazon. Democrats are saying, no, if you're wearing the uniform, you're doing the job, they got command and control of you, you work for them. And they have certain things that they have to meet. Workers' comp, unemployment, you go down the list. Union rights. Republicans are saying, no. No joint employer rule. In fact, when Trump took office, one of the first things he did was overturn Obama's joint employer rule. So for me, this is another one of those issues that working people have to go, which side am I on? Am I on the side of we want good jobs that pay good wages, where I have union rights, where I have security rights, where I'm actually an employee? Or do I want to work in an environment of at will? I'm on my own. It's a gig job. There's nothing there that the corporation has any responsibility to me. It's only what can you do for me now? So understand, November, when election time comes around, these are the issues that you've got to weigh. Look, the personalities, I don't care about that. It's the issues. It's this, which side? Do you believe in working, that you work for a company, or not so much? I do want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, that's where you go. Podcast, if you miss any portion of the show, or freespeech.org. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick.
You're listening to Mad Radio.
WMDX 1580 AM Columbus. W224 EG Madison.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.